I'm Jamie Hurst, and for the MSU Denver Alumni Association, we're excited to bring you Bird Talk, a podcast about our alumni, their careers, and their lives.
First of all, I want to say thanks for inviting me to do this. I've not done this before, so I get to learn today, and hopefully I do well.
You'll do great.
So far, all good.
So far, and we're fact-checked, so that's good. Our guest today is Roy Alexander, a proud 1974 graduate of the College of Business, where he earned his degree in accounting. Roy was born to teenage parents on the island nation of Grenada, the firstborn of six children. Following his high school graduation in 1970, Roy decided to move to the United States with the goal of becoming a CPA. He chose Denver because of a great aunt that lived here and enrolled at MSU Denver. After earning his degree in 1974, Roy obtained his CPA license and began his career as an auditor for Deloitte. After more than a decade there, he joined CHAFA, the Colorado Housing and Finance Authority, where he rose from assistant director of finance to CFO and eventually executive director and CEO until his retirement in 2009. Today, he is the vice chair and an independent director for FHL Bank Topeka, bringing decades of leadership experience in finance, housing, and community development. Roy's commitment to community has landed him on advisory boards across various organizations throughout his career, including the National Council of State Housing Agencies, the Congressional Millennial Housing Commission, Housing Colorado, Colorado Community Land Trust, the Northeast Denver Housing Center, where he served as chair for decades, and the Lowry Redevelopment Authority, among many others. Roy's accomplishments have earned him recognition from the Denver Metro Chamber of Commerce as the 2006 David E. Bailey Small Business Advocate of the Year. And in 2024, he received MSU Denver's Lifetime Achievement Award presented at the Alumni Association's Golden Nest Club Luncheon. Roy is one of the very first alums I met when I moved to Denver, and I couldn't be happier to have him and his wife Cheryl on the show today. Welcome to Bird Talk.
Thank you.
So Roy, how are you? It's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
I know. We just spent an evening together a couple weeks ago at the scholarship dinner.
Yeah. It seems like I spent a lot of time on the campus and near to the campus as well.
Yeah. So the scholarship dinner was fun. It was a great table. It was you, me, and Russell Knowles. Yeah. And so a lot of sports talk. It happened right after the Nuggets made a big decision on parting ways with their GM and their coach right before the playoffs. Yeah. But so far, it's panning out okay. They're making a little decent run.
So far, so good.
Yeah. We'll see it.
Let's hope for the best.
So, Roy, as I was taking a look at your bio and where you come up, and I know we've talked about you growing up in the Caribbean, but I'd love to hear a little bit about your story and kind of your roots and how you made that gigantic move and decision to leave the islands and head your way to Denver, Colorado, of all places.
So imagine a small island in the Caribbean, 100,000 people, not much to do upon graduation from high school. So the first thing you find yourself doing is to think about, do I want to go to Canada, the United States, England, or some other country to obtain a higher education? And I decided to come to Colorado, mainly because of this great aunt that you've mentioned, who had lived here 28 years at the time.
Wow.
Already had decided that I wanted to be an accountant. Not just an accountant, but a CPA, certified public accountant. So I came here, and frankly, I tried to get into school, but realized when I spoke with MSU, well, back then it wasn't MSU, it was Metropolitan State College of Denver. So anyway, when I touched base with admissions here at Metro, I was told that they needed my high school diploma. I did have one. It turned out that it was called the General Certificate of Education that was produced by Cambridge University in England, because Grenada at the time was still a British colony. So I presented my GCE. It showed that I had graduated from high school with, I think it's five subjects. You're required to pass a minimum of four. However, after review, I was told that there's no way for them to equate that GCE to what would be a high school diploma here. And I'm going, what do I do now? Fortunately, in speaking with my great aunt and her teenage children, one of whom was my age, they suggested that I consider the GED, taking the general education. Well, I forget what it's called. Anyway, it's the GED from Opportunity School. So I did that without actually studying, and I passed it, and I came back to Metro State, and I got accepted.
Yeah.
So that's what got me here. But the reason for MSU was that, first of all, I had no money.
Yeah.
I'm an immigrant, right? I don't have a job. So I needed an opportunity that was affordable, an opportunity that allowed me to work at least part-time.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be MSU Denver. And one other thing, I lived with my great aunt when I first came, and we were only about 5 miles from downtown. And so I needed transportation. I didn't have a car, so I needed to be close to transportation, which I was. So proximity to transportation, affordability, and the recommendation of my great aunt, and here I am, I ended up here.
So many things had to kind of work out, and I'm so glad that they did. And I do find it fascinating that you had to go back and do the GED, because I would imagine, I would hope things have changed a lot since the 1970s, but there just wasn't probably the technology or the way to validate that what was happening in other countries
That's
and other
exactly
places.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's fascinating. Now, you almost didn't come to college, though, because you had a chance to play cricket, from what I heard. You're a pretty excellent cricket player.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were aware of that.
I told you, I do some really good internet stalking before these.
So not to be boasting, but yes, I was, I'd say, excellent cricket player as a teenager. In fact, my parents would say, if you can't find Roy at home, go to the cricket pitch, is what it was called, and he'll be there. So it turned out that at the time that I got my visa to come to the United States, I got called up for the national team.
Yeah.
And I had this crossroad in front of me to make a decision. And then I just decided, you know, it's a question of England for professional cricket or education in the United States. And I chose to come to the United States and go with really what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I was comfortable with my decision to become a CPA, mainly because of a friend, a good friend that I had, who told me that he was also going to the United States about a year before, and he would study to become a CPA. So if my friend is going to do accounting and become a CPA, I felt, you know, that's good for me.
Yeah. I have to imagine that had to have been such a tough pull, especially if you'd grown up playing cricket and you see yourself, oh my gosh, I'm getting the call, this opportunity. Yeah. It's like chasing a childhood dream, but having the emotional maturity to be like, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to actually make the decision that's probably best for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Because education, you were the first. I also read that you were the first person in your family and your neighborhood to even go to high school.
Yes.
And so I have to feel like there's a little bit of a, not a burden in a bad way, but there's probably a lot of weight on that. Like, no, I need to show that education is possible and it can change my life.
This was an opportunity. Sometimes I get kind of choked up when I talk about this, but my father would always remind me in particular that had he and my mom not had me, he would have stayed and finished high school and went on to additional education. And he would boast how he could have been this guy with this major position that he had working for this company. So he felt that he sort of sacrificed his own education for the sake of you know, of his children. So that was a constant reminder for me. So I felt like I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
But I also felt it was a sort of message and motivation for me to, you know, to go this route.
Yeah.
As opposed to cricket.
There's so many guests that I've had the opportunity to interview that are first generation college graduates as well. And my mom, similarly, on my mom's side of the family, no one had earned their college degree. I was the first one among seven. She has seven siblings total, or there's seven of them, so six siblings. Yeah. I've got 30, 40 some odd cousins, and like it was me and two of my cousins that are just a couple years older than me that were the first to go to college in that entire line of people. So when we talk about that, it is that interesting feeling of like, oh no, we're setting a precedent. And it's so funny that my dad did go to college. He got a four-year degree, but my mom didn't. And I just remember her being the one that was like, no, 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 you're going to go to school. Like, it's not an option.
Yeah.
Because very similarly, like, it was in her grasp. Yeah. She had opportunities, but she had to raise the kids below her and all of the things like that. And so I do love that you can approach that as, I didn't have an opportunity to go to college, so you're not either, or I didn't have one, so 100% you're going to. And it sounds like that motivation was really great for you.
I don't know how much time we have, but so there was another issue related to this that was a huge driver. My dad, You could not go home from school and say you didn't have homework. Dad would make up homework for you, and he would keep you up late at night getting the homework done. So in a way, he was sort of really hammering that message into us. All of my siblings will tell you about that.
I always have to tell his story to kids that I teach. You know, with his parents having a third and fourth grade education, if that, and him coming from this impoverished island, all of the siblings did well.
Yeah.
Our son studied engineering.
Here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Metro. My mom attended school here. Mm-hmm. She was a teacher. Roy's younger brother studied electrical engineering, and his sister studied electrical engineering, and she has her own company with about 200 employees. Oh. And I said, how did you do that? Mm-hmm. How, you know? And it's all about just focusing on what you want to do, know what your goals are. I tell the kids this all the time, and work as hard as you can. I always say it seems like the immigrants, you know, they come from these poor countries. Some of them come over here in a boat, you know, from Cambodia, and they end up running a company.
Yeah.
You know, and I say, wow, that's great. So,
yeah, it is. There's so much to be said for hard work. And it's kind of sometimes the hill that I die on now that I feel like the definition of hard work has changed over time. Mm-hmm. I love that what you got to see was five siblings after you see your example and say, oh, yeah, we can do this. Because it's so important to have that mirror of and just that person to be able to say, oh, if Roy did it, I can do it too. Mm-hmm. Now, have they all come to the United States or are they kind of scattered?
All of us are in the U.S.
Okay.
Five in Denver Metro.
Oh, great.
One in New York.
Okay. Yeah.
She studied education.
Okay. And
so she has been a teacher. It was sort of hammered into us, and it was a way out for us because we grew up in very, very poor surroundings.
Yeah. I read a story about how when you were getting into high school, you guys didn't have electricity or water, running water.
Where'd you see that?
I'm telling you. Yeah. Chaffa did a great piece on you for their 50th anniversary, calling you the change maker. And I thought that was perfect because I'm like, we're the change makers here too. Yeah. Learning that you didn't have that growing up and your mom saw on the way home from her job, saw a piece of land that was available, called the bank, said, hey, I want to buy this land. And they wouldn't even invite that at all. And so she somehow managed to locate the owner of the property, told her the story about, nope, we're raising these children. I have a boy that's going to high school. We need this. Yeah. And so was able to get that land. You built the house and you give a testament to this idea that you could succeed in education because of how important it was to just have those basic necessities met. Yeah.
$1,500 for that quarter of an acre of land. And we actually, myself and my brother George, he's the third. Mm-hmm. He and I worked on the construction of the house. So after school, we would stop by the property, not very far from the school. We would stop by, and if it was mixing concrete, cement, so that you could get the bricks installed, it didn't matter what it was. We would stop by and get some work done before we went home.
To then go do the extra homework your dad made for you.
Yeah. So it was some really difficult beginnings, but the good thing is that it was kind of fun. We didn't have the running water, but we would fight for the exposed pipes where the sun hit in the afternoon and the water would be warm. So I'd want to get my shower wet.
Fair.
Or we would use these buckets to carry water on our heads from a quarter of a mile.
Wow.
Yeah. Just walk with that on your head. And have you ever tried carrying a bucket of water on your head?
I haven't. Can't imagine it's easy.
I'll just give you a quick story. You get a towel and you wrap it into the form of a circle. Mm-hmm. You set it there and then you put the bucket on your head and you get a branch from a tree with a bunch of leaves and you drop it in the water and you walk and the branch will prevent the water from spilling.
Splashing out?
Yeah.
Stacey, you need to tell Survivor that because that is always a Survivor challenge. And every time they run with water, I'm always like, it's splashing out. See, look at the things you know.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's an incredible, and again, I've known you for a very long time. We've had many conversations about things, but there were so many things I didn't know about that transition. And I just think it's so incredible that you took that leap as a young man. And you look at what's happened. Your family has followed you here. We mentioned your son, Ian, got an electrical engineering degree from here, I think in 2012. Yeah. It's painting a picture of possibility for people, and I love it.
Yeah. I felt, too, that I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
Right? And it wasn't a negative. It was a positive, right? Dad laid out, you know, he worked hard and he kept telling us in his own way, we have an opportunity.
Yeah.
And he was basically saying, you know, you have the opportunity to turn out and become better than he was. Mm-hmm. And that was okay with me. And I didn't like it when I had to stay up late and do all this homework. But I came to the United States and never thought of would head back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So math. And a CPA, was that always your wheelhouse? Or
Yeah. I had math instructors who would write in my notebook things like, you will be successful. I didn't keep those. I don't know where they are. Things like that.
Yeah.
Math was my passion. Mm-hmm. I actually used my strength at math to help my oldest sister get through high school. Mm-hmm. So I would essentially teach her the math. And, you know, there's this stereotype that women, math is not their thing, right?
Sure.
Well, she had some of that feeling too, but fortunately for her and me, she listened and she did really well. And actually, in her high school, she earned a nickname, and I think the nickname was Pure Maths. Really? That was her nickname. She ended up in education, and I don't think she taught math, but she was successful.
But probably an impactful moment to have, because I do think about that often, that sometimes even in college or high school or even in elementary school, there's certain teachers that you remember fondly.
Yeah.
And it's likely, A, because they were people that you engaged with in some sort of way that was impactful, but also because they probably taught in a way that was more conducive for you learning. Yeah. The number of courses that I was in, the content I loved, but I just couldn't. It just wasn't clicking at that moment. And so there's so much value in kind of rethinking through how are we communicating to a whole group of students. And now as a faculty member, I'll tell you, that's the challenge for me because I want to teach a very specific way. Yeah. But if I've got, you know, nothing behind the eyes as I'm giving a lecture, I'm like, okay, this isn't hitting. Let's try maybe some sort of analogies or let's talk about what this would look like now or let's use something else. And I would imagine her experience with having you kind of tutor her opened her eyes to there's different ways of communicating the same content.
I experienced some of that. I don't want to call it hand-holding, but caring here at MSU Denver.
Oh, yeah.
Russell Bean. Do you have you heard that name?
I have heard that name.
Dr. Russ Bean. He was, his title might have been chairman of the accounting department. Anyway, he was like a father to me in a way. Oftentimes, he would call on me to speak, to respond, because I'd be quiet and like, sitting there. And so he called on me and that got me thinking, well, this guy is interested in me and my success. And it didn't stop there. There came a time during my senior year, the big CPA firms, there were eight of them. They would come on campus and conduct on-campus interviews so that you could have the opportunity to be hired right out of college by one of these big firms. And I did not put my name on any of the lists for interviews. And he actually pulled me aside one night before class and asked me point blank, have you been attending these interviews? And I said, no. And he said, okay, well, see me after class. It wasn't in a rough way or anything like that, but he said, stop by after class and we'll have a chat. And during the session after class, he just looked at me and he said, what the hell is wrong with you? He really did.
Yeah.
And he counseled me there a little bit. And he gave me five of his business cards, five business cards, one for each of five firms. And he said, call him, talk to them and request an interview. So I did. And that's how I ended up in the big eight firms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just think about if you were just a number in a classroom instead of one of, you know, probably a small class, 25, 30 students, and you didn't know your faculty member by name and they didn't know you and they were just anonymously grading papers, that you would have missed that opportunity. Yeah. And that is one of those things that I think is so great about the education students receive here.
But that's our professor who cared.
Yeah.
Clearly. And I think There's a lot of that here at
there
the
is.
University. Yeah.
And I love that the caring isn't just to make sure that you get the best education that is the most impactful, but it's where are you going to go with that? Mm-hmm. And I will say the College of Business is fantastic. They still do that. The accounting firms still come to campus and mm-hmm. they still recruit right out of the classrooms, which is great. And there's so much more of that now happening across a lot of disciplines.
Yeah.
But understanding that we need to activate our degrees into a career to really help with the next place in our life is something that our faculty does an exceptional job with.
So to take that one step further, when I became manager with Deloitte, back then it was called Touche Ross, but since they've merged and got bigger and bigger. So anyway, the firm actually sent me to recruit at 4 or 5 different universities in the South to try to get students to come to work in Denver. And we were successful with that. So in a way, I was giving back some of what was given to me there too. Yeah.
Do you ever recruit any MSU Denver students?
I did interview here, but I don't recall if we hired any.
Fair enough.
Yeah. They basically sent me to mostly, what do you call it, predominantly back to
HBCUs.
HBCUs.
That's great. Yeah. So 10 years doing auditing work in that space, and then you get a call from CHAFA.
No, actually, after those 10 years, one of the students that I tried to recruit from Florida, it was Florida A&M University in Tallahassee. He did not come to work for my firm, Deloitte, but he moved to Denver and he worked for one of the other big 8 firms. But we remained friends. And after my 10 years, I decided I had enough because I wanted to be a partner in the firm. I had written a banner, a simple banner in my closet that said, I will be a partner in this firm, Touche Ross, in the Denver office within 10 years. Because I found out that 10 years was the average time it took to go from right out of college to be a partner of the firm. And 1984 came, I had my 10 years, and the firm decided they were not going to make any new partners that year. Because we were undergoing a huge downturn in the energy business, oil and gas, which Denver at the time was second to Houston, I believe, right? It's not anything to do with me, but the fact is it's 10 years. That was my goal. So I said to myself, if I get to the water, I'm going to either drink or turn back. I'm not going to wait. So I just moved on. So what I moved on to was this fellow CPA from the other firm that I tried to recruit. It turns out that he had enough too, and he wanted to move on. So he and I teamed up, and we bought a cookie franchise.
Yeah, I read about this too.
In what was Colorado's second largest shopping mall, up in Westminster. It's no longer there. So we bought that franchise and got that going. And we had plans to expand it, but the economy was just not good, and it continued to lag there for a while. So we decided both to get jobs again. And I got the call from a former board member, either former board member, I don't remember if he was still on the board, Penfield Tate. He was former mayor of Boulder. Penfield Tate, he wore this twisted mustache. I mean, twisted up.
Like,
anyway, and he mentioned this job opening at CHAFA and asked me to call the CEO and ask for an interview. And so I got the interview and I was hired as an assistant to the director of finance. But they never told me that he was about to retire. So a little over 12 months as the assistant, he announced that he was retiring. And I kind of got a sense something was going on because once I started working there, he would say, you go to those meetings. I'm not going to those meetings. So I got the practice of being the CEO, the chief financial officer. He was working 5 to 6 hours a day, 3 days a week. So that told me something is odd here. And eventually he announced he was retiring and then they promoted me to the chief financial officer position. So it worked out really well for me.
Yeah. And I have to think it was such a great pairing of things that you were passionate about, obviously the money, the numbers and all that, with your history of how important housing was to you and your family to now be in a position to work for an organization that was going to help hundreds of thousands of other people.
It just reminded me of what housing we had, right? And the poor housing that we had, right? You had to use lanterns or kerosene lamps at night, and the smoke would just burn your eyes.
Yeah.
And you're trying to read, and your eyes are burning, and you can't. So the opportunity to go from that to some education, the opportunities to go from there to the acquisition of the quarter of an acre of land to build a home where we would have rooms and you have electricity, you have running water now. And not only that, but to be in a community that was thriving.
Yeah.
You had all kinds of professionals in there. And that's where I actually first learned the value of involvement in community organizations as a teenager, which has stuck with me up to this day, right?
Yeah, your list of boards, I couldn't even get through all of them. I just picked some highlighted ones. But you are very much a sought-after person because I think of that passion and your knowledge, right?
29 or 30, I think.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah. I was just driven.
Yeah.
Just the drive was just a part of my daily outlook. So
it seemed to have all worked out, right?
No complaints.
So a long career at Chaffa and then finally decide to retire. But you didn't stay too retired too long.
Well, I always say that I did not retire. I retired from a company.
Fair.
I made sure that the language in the press release said retired from, because I knew I was going to continue to stay active.
Yeah.
Yes, I did some consulting work assisting nonprofit organizations that were in the housing business. So that led me to stay active, stay close to the industry. Mm-hmm. And then in the early 90s, while still at Chaffa, well, in my prime at Chaffa, I started a business relationship with the Federal Home Loan Bank because I was looking for sources of capital to fund some of these mortgages that we were producing across the state. And we needed some assistance. And that relationship with the Federal Home Loan Bank was not lost on them or me. So after I left Chaffa, I got a call that there was this opening for an independent director, and they have two types of member and independent. They asked if I would consider going through the process, which I was happy because I was familiar with the bank. I was qualified in so many different ways. I mean, a lot of the directors, there's one set of skills, but I was sort of an all-round knowledge of the home loan bank, housing. What Chaffa did was similar to what the Federal Home Loan Bank does, which is provide financing to assist, you know, communities, essentially. So I was really pleased for that. And here I am. And this is my 11th year. I have three more years, and then I'm term limited.
But, and then you get him fully retired, right?
Yeah. And I love that bank.
Yeah. Well, so do we here, right?
You know, yeah.
And of course, I think the perfect culmination of kind of your interest in what you did in Chaffa and what FHL Bank has done came to fruition with MSU Denver's new Affordable Housing Institute. Yeah. And I know you were at the heart of helping that connection be made. So I'd love for you to just share with our audience a little bit about what is now known as the FHL Bank Topeka Affordable Housing Institute, which is pretty incredible.
I'm not sure if I could share anything new, but obviously I've remained very close to I could consider it very close to the university over the years.
Yeah.
And so I was called to be one of those dozen or so individuals who participated during COVID, what do you call it, social distance, six feet apart in this room, just to discuss the concept of what affordable housing curriculum might do for the benefit of affordable housing in general. And so we were just brainstorming and coming up with all these ideas where the needs are, how difficult it is to find employees. And when you do find employees, you have to train them in-house. And for some of those reasons, the potential workers didn't really look to Chaffa, right?
No.
Or these nonprofits. So the process went on, and I was not too directly involved, but I would get feedback as things went on. And eventually, when the concept had been fine-tuned and it was going to be presented to Chaffa, I supported that idea because Chaffa basically had to say yes, is how I saw it.
Right?
I don't want to say that to them, but they're the statewide entity, very prominent. They're in a good position to further promote their mission by participating in some sort of funding relationship with the university. So I had no doubt in my mind that Chaffa would say yes to that. That was seed capital, right? In fact, before that was accomplished, I already had in my mind, what better place than the Federal Home Loan Bank of Topeka, of which Colorado is one of the states in this district. And It would be good for the bank, good for the community, good for the banks here, the banks in Colorado that are members, and even beneficial to all four states and, frankly, beyond that. Any student anywhere across the nation, particularly if you're offering something online these days, maybe, this is an opportunity and it's something new. Let's jump at it. So I presented the concept to the bank and they were very receptive. In fact, I did not anticipate any pushback at all. Yeah. It just made a whole lot of sense.
Those are the best types of gifts when it's just a pure pairing of mission and the interest of what the impact we want to have. And I don't have to convince you of anything. This is just literally right in your wheelhouse. And here's how we can double, triple, quadruple our impact by, you know, expanding services, whatever the case might be.
Now, I didn't know that the magnitude of the gift would be at that level.
Yeah.
I knew it had the potential. Obviously, the bank saw it as a big opportunity.
Yeah, so it is incredible. And so we now have the institute that has been named the FHL Bank Topeka Affordable Housing Institute, which is great. And the curriculum, what I loved as I've really kind of dove into that through this campaign is that you're really hitting on three different key places in the affordable housing space, right? The finance side, which of course is very important. And I would imagine shifting quite a bit from, and probably looks a lot different than it did when you started in this business. But then the property management and the resident services space, because it isn't just about funding the mortgages and making sure that it's there. It's what are we creating and what are we providing after that space too?
For the first time ever, you have the chance to leave your legacy on MSU Denver's campus. During the Roadrunners Rise campaign, you can make a gift to reserve an engraved brick that will be installed outside the brand new student housing building scheduled for completion in 2027. Your brick will cement your support and dedication to MSU Denver. Visit msudenverbricks.com/shop to start paving your legacy today. Calling all Roadrunners! MSU Denver is turning 60. That's right, since 1965, MSU Denver has provided high-quality, accessible education to over 115,000 Roadrunners. And during the 2025-2026 academic year, we want to celebrate our 60 years of excellence with you. Join your fellow Roadrunners at Homecoming 2025 this October. And whether you attend the 5th Annual Women of MSU Denver Alumni Networking event, celebrate with us at the annual tailgate party, or even run in the 5K, we want to celebrate our 60th anniversary with you. So visit msudenver.edu/homecoming for event details and to RSVP. This episode is brought to you by The Roadrunner, reminding you to slow down and not get into a feather bender.
I do appreciate, too, just the focus has shifted to the community space, too. Yeah. And it's not just, to your point, it's not just about funding the projects, but it's about how are we making sure that we're creating neighborhoods and environments and communities that people can thrive. Because even when I was looking a little bit more into CHAFA, it's not just the loans, the down payment assessment, and but it's the homebuyer education piece too. And it's those resources that it's like, if you are the first in your family to be even considering buying a home, you don't even know where to start, let alone how the process works. And anytime you're working with a realtor, they're so fast talking you. Nobody, you know, you're not really knowing what's going on. You don't understand the difference between your APR versus the, you know. And so some of those just education resources and continued services as things happen is so vital.
When I started at CHAFA, we did not provide home buyer education.
Yeah.
We started servicing the loans that we made in-house, right, as opposed to paying a third party.
Yeah.
So that was one way for us to not only generate revenue from the servicing, but it's our customer, the buyer. That's our customer. So we want to know how they're doing on an ongoing basis. Yeah. So hence, why not service the loan in-house? And so we got to know our customers better and better. We would get calls where a home buyer would call up after year two or year one and say, well, wait a minute. I thought my mortgage rate, my monthly mortgage payment was fixed at this amount. Why did it change?
Yeah.
They didn't realize that insurance went up or property taxes went up. And those two affect.
Things you don't know until you've been in a home buyer space, right?
So there's a lot we learned and there's a lot that we're continuing to learn. The value of supportive services in the elderly, you know, different population. Now, these multifamily affordable housing projects, some of them are providing in-house daycare.
Yeah.
Makes a whole lot of sense to me.
Sure does.
Anyway, there's a lot of upside, I think, to the Institute and what it can deliver in the future.
And I love that we're one of the first schools, if not the first school, I think.
I think we are the first.
We're going to just keep saying it. And it's just like how the University of Iowa says, we are the number one communication school in the nation. According to what? We don't know. But if you say it enough times, people will buy in. So we're the first school to do this.
Yeah.
I am so excited to see what the course of that will look like and how the evolution of it will continue to grow, especially being in Denver, where we have a housing crisis that is much more prevalent, I think, than maybe some less metropolitan areas. Yeah. And we're seeing just a really interesting bubble. And how does that work? And our clientele hasn't necessarily changed. Our wages maybe haven't gone up in the same way that housing has. And so there's going to be such a need that this is a perfect kind of petri dish to beta test this idea of how do we train people to accomplish things in this space.
Yeah.
And I just love that you were behind both of the gifts that seeded
that. I'm not a wealthy guy, but I do my monetary part. There are other ways you can do it and help. And this is one way to go in with the eyes wide open and be thoughtful of the university. And this opportunity was kind of brewing there. And I was saying, is it going to be a big fish for the university?
So, It is. I do think it's such an important thing. Like, yes, there's so many of us, especially at this point in our fundraising campaign, right? Yeah. $100 million, that's a lot of money. And most of us will see something in a magazine or an email and go, well, I can't make a dent in $100 million. Sure, you know, we want to do our part. But again, I don't have that kind of money. I think what people fail to sometimes do is make that connection you did, which is that it might not be me, but I can be a conduit to so much of this because I love connecting dots. And you were in a perfect situation where you had an incredible experience here as an alum, stayed connected over time. I think you even served on the advisory boards in the College of Business, right?
Yeah.
And then you're in two unique spaces between the Federal Home Loan Bank and Chaffa to say, hey, guys, I'm seeing this mission moment that is a bright star, and let's all get this together. Mm-hmm. And so facilitating that collective problem solving is one of the best things that our community members can do.
By the way, were you aware that the Home Loan Bank live streamed?
Oh, yeah. The event that was
back
here?
To the office of the 250 employees.
Everybody. In addition to the 50 or 60 that came, which was incredible.
The bank conducted an internal survey of their employees. What the thoughts were regarding the celebration and the institute and everything. And then summarized the results, and I asked the general counsel, who was integrally involved in the process, would that be something that could be shared with the university? Mm-hmm. And, of course, they had to look at, make sure there's nothing in there.
Let the lawyers do lawyer things.
So the answer was yes. A copy of it was sent. I had him send it to Ann Murphy. Is she still here?
She is. She retires at the end of this year.
Send it to Ann and Christine.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you have it because it had some really good feedback that I think the university perhaps could in some way use promotionally and whatever.
Yeah. But it was an incredible event. I remember it vividly because it was on Valentine's Day and there was that nice image of the two cities in the heart.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, that's so clever. Yeah. David actually made that image. And so the cool. Topeka skyline
And the cut in from the red, Valentine red to the white. You designed that?
Yeah.
That was so cool. I mean,
Not only is he great at making us sound good on this podcast, he's also great at that stuff too.
You remember the reaction of the audience there? It roared. I mean, like you're an abs gamer. No, seriously.
It was very well received, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And so I remember it so vividly, and everyone I met was so charming and nice and genuinely delighted to be up here, to be able to celebrate this day with us and realize they're a part of this. And I do love that especially about gifts here at MSU Denver. You know, we're in our first campaign, right? $100 million, it's a lot of money, but it's not $5, $6 billion like you're seeing at other places. And so to be partnered with an organization that has that same genuine care that's like, no, we're going to make something happen and we're going to be so bought in whether we're giving you $50, $2 million or $100 million. And it just felt so real and I appreciated it so dearly.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about FHL Bank or anything?
I actually almost got potentially, I could have been deported.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So why are you laughing? So I took an elective, is that what they still call it?
Yeah, yeah.
Elective sociology class. Okay. And at the time I was working, I had a part-time job, so I would go to work, then go to school, and then go back to work, or mm-hmm. sometimes it's vice versa. So I had this sociology class in the evening, and I'm carrying a full load, either 12 or more than 12. And the sociology teacher started reading, just reading from the book. Mm. That's how he taught. And I couldn't, that was turning me off,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I just felt like I could read the book mm-hmm. myself, right? I decided to drop the class. Mm. Little did I know that the university was required to report to the U.S. Immigration Office here if you dropped a class. So I got a call from them.
Jeez.
And they asked me to come to the office, their office. And they asked me why. Why? Explain why I dropped a class. And boy, I was nervous. Like, I was really nervous.
Yeah.
But the truth is, when I told them, I didn't feel I could learn by just sitting there and watching. And I mean, occasionally you could quote, you know, a
sure.
section or so, but this was just totally yep. reading. I said, I didn't feel that I would learn and I would be wasting my money. So mm-hmm. I just dropped a class. And they asked me a few other questions, which I don't recall, but that one in particular, I gave them the answer and I told them the truth. And then they said, well, we'll give you a pass only because of your grades. Mm-hmm. And I've been taking some 15-hour credits and so on.
And higher level yeah, accounting, yeah. finance,
so,
yeah.
And because of that, yeah. I was allowed to remain here.
Oh, my goodness.
And finish my college. And then upon graduation, I wasn't sure I was going to stick around and work here, but for those business cards that yeah. were given to me by Dr. Bean. That was just one of the interesting things that happened to me here.
Yeah.
It was fun. I love this university.
You said your dad went here or your mom went here? So there's a whole lineage of all sorts of.
Yeah. Well, this rebranding effort by the university yeah. back in the early 2010s was intended to emphasize the multi-generational student body.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a guest on the podcast, yeah. Sometime last year, Alyssa Svalberg. She was a volleyball player here. And so I watched her play for the last, 7 years. Like, I knew who she was. And I knew that she'd had some family members that went here. But when she came on the podcast, she was like, oh, no, it's my mom, my dad, my brother, my aunt. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, and it was just such a cool thing to be like, no, there is really something to be said about the Roadrunner family. And especially if you have somebody before you that goes and it hits on all the things, right? I mean, no, part of the interest at the beginning was that it was affordable and it was accessible in terms of being able to work and do this. But now when we start talking about the excellence that comes with that too, I mean, we're sitting with somebody who's been on top of a couple banks and housing authorities, like it's a very cool thing to say the quality of the education and the excellence of your experience here isn't going to be matched a lot of places.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I credit, and I don't know if this is widespread in thought, but I felt like I was able to assimilate myself with the companies that I work for, at Touche Ross / Deloitte.
Yeah.
Very much so because of the environment here, the student body here. I was able to get along.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of audits, right? Different industries. And each client is different. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to communicate and interact. If you want to get answers, then get that audit done, you had to have that ability to connect with the people, right? Because a lot of times auditors tend to be, you're trying to get somebody, but that was not me, right?
You're just curious.
I was doing my job and also trying to help the client, right? So I felt that some of that came from MSU Denver. Up to this day, I still feel that way.
Yeah, there's much to be said about having such a diverse campus and that diversity covering all sorts of things.
Yeah,
I always
say
my experience, because I took classes here, oh gosh, I was in my late 30s to my 40s, right? Because that's a part of our benefits as being an employee is you get free tuition. So I earned another degree from here because I was like, well, I'll take advantage of that. And I've talked at length about it on this podcast. So all of our millions of viewers are like, Jamie, we know this story. But I loved that I could walk into a classroom and I didn't feel othered because I was the 40-year-old woman sitting in the class. There was plenty of other people. Age differences, race differences, socioeconomic differences, whether someone was hustling from work or they were a full-time student. You got that breadth of experiences that actually I think really helped the course. I mean, there was a handful of courses that as somebody that's worked for 25 years and as somebody that's been in different industries, sometimes the professor would just be like, Jamie, tell them how this really works in real life, right? Because the book tells us something and research tells us something, but then like, okay, but how does that really work?
Right.
And so I loved that there was that opportunity for so many of our students to learn in a myriad of different ways because there were so many different things represented in that classroom. And I think you're absolutely right. There's so much to the soft skill of being able to read a room and understand how can I be the most persuasive and an effective person in that room. Yeah. And so much of it is just understanding, A, what's our common thread? I'm actually trying to help your company. I'm not here to catch you, right? It's not a gotcha moment. I'm here to help you. And how can I do that by looking at the personalities and the differences in that space? Yeah. Is your son still here or did he?
No, he got married in 2017. His wife is from San Antonio and she was working in Dallas as a physical therapist. And he chose to move down there. I think he's an electrical engineer with emphasis in automation. By the way, I've got to tell you this. It was so funny. So upon graduation, he went to work for my sister's company. He worked for them for 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then he met his wife and...
She actually has her doctorate in physical therapy.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He decided to move. We were having dinner one night and we got a text message from him. And the message said, she said yes.
Right.
So you inferred the question, but you didn't know. So he didn't give you guys a heads up at all?
No.
Oh.
No.
Kept it close to his skull.
Yeah. But he decided to move down there, and I think they like it down there. We have a 6-year-old grandson. Mm-hmm. We're happy about that.
Yeah. So retirement will at least give you some time there to build the Roadrunner roots in the next generation too. Don't get him sucked into the UTs and the, you know, all the big flashy Texas schools. Get him back up here.
We keep encouraging him to keep his head up.
Yeah.
I worked hard and what helped me was a drive. It was unwavering to pursue something that was kind of bold because I knew nobody who was an accountant on the island. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there was such a thing as a CPA. Mm-hmm. So for me, selecting something that was kind of bold to step out in that field and to have the drive and commitment to it and stick to it and try and succeed at it, that's what drove me throughout my educational life here in MSU Denver. And I'm thankful for that. That's one of the big reasons why I remained connected.
Yeah. And you've been pretty connected since your graduation. I know we talked about, obviously, what you've been doing with the Federal Housing and Loan Bank.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you've been part of the business advisory boards with Dean Murphy and a whole bunch of things and opportunities to just, we can't tear you away, you know, which is a good
thing. I've even assisted Sean Worthy on the athletic advisory committee. Of course, in the Alumni Association many years ago.
Yeah, I think I just missed you. I think I had just come on board.
Yes,
because we had done that. That's one of the first times that I met you. We had kind of a working group to rethink through what could the and what should the Alumni Association be for a university that is as distinct and different in our student population. Our association should probably reflect that.
Right.
There was a handful of alums on that board, but I was very thankful for your participation. Yeah. And then you're still friends with a lot of alums, too. Like, you and Russell are pretty close, right?
Yeah. Russell and I, we go way back. He and I were both members of the National Association of Bank Accountants, which I was the president of for 1 or 2 years. I don't remember. And we're sort of interesting. You know, sometimes that's why people have to be careful what you say, what you do, how you do. Because it was only much later on after he graduated and moved on that he said, you know, you were my mentor. That's what he said to me. I didn't know that.
But,
you know, and I was really happy to wait. He's been very successful.
Yeah, and such a champion for this institution. I had him on the podcast. And Russell's another one that I've known for a very long time and been close with. And I go, okay, we're going to ask the hard-hitting questions. How are the Broncos going to do this? We spent like 30 minutes just talking about it. But I do appreciate so deeply that he had this fantastic career at TIAA. Yeah. He's come back. He was our first alumni chair of the Board of Trustees, which is incredible. And in that time was so intentional of making adjustments to be able to say, how can we get the Alumni Association and the alumni story involved? And so he's been great, even still sitting on the board, and now our chair, Kristen Holquist, is embracing that as well. And so it's been so fantastic. You get the visible image of the excellence of this institution every time that the board meets, because we have an alum finally on there that is kind of that living, breathing space. But he's a fun dude. We do always end all of our podcasts with the rapid fire. So it's three questions. And so I will ask them one at a time, and then it's just the first thing that comes to your mind. I mean, you can have a moment to think, but they're just about your experience here. All right, you ready? Okay, your favorite MSU Denver memory.
My favorite, and I mentioned it earlier, it's the night while waiting on class to get started when Dr. Bean walked past me, entered the room, and he asked me, have I been attending the on-campus interviews by the big eight CPA firms? And I had to tell him no. We started a conversation, and in that conversation, he asked me simply, what the hell is wrong with you? Don't you realize you have an opportunity here? And for him, he was so caring and asked me to call him, the big eight CPA firms, and tell him that he asked that we consider giving me an interview, so which I got, and I got offers from all of them, and I chose to work for Deloitte.
That's incredible.
Deloitte.
And again, just that idea that somebody cared enough to say, hey, what's wrong with you? Come on. That guidance is huge.
It really felt like he cared.
Yeah.
That's what I saw. I needed that.
Now. That's perfect. Yeah. All right. What does it mean to you to be a roadrunner?
Well, a lot of things. Passion, drive, quite frankly, drive for success. Just stay with it. That's one reason why I felt what helped me was I had this goal, and the university helped push me towards that goal. Yeah. My success resulted from that.
Yeah. That's great. All right, last one. If you could put a billboard somewhere on campus with any piece of advice for students, what would it say?
What would it say? I would say adopt a goal, something bold that will force you to stretch. And this may be too long to put on the thing, but adopt a bold goal and strive to succeed and enjoy the small steps along the way.
Yeah.
I don't know if that...
It's going to be a 10-point font billboard, but it's going to be worth it. I love that.
Because that's what I felt I did. I had the motivation and the drive. I had this goal in mind, and I stayed with it, and I pushed forward. And boy, it felt really good when my mom flew up here. My dad couldn't make it, but my mom flew here for the graduation.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. So it was all good.
I love that you said bold goal. It's not just a goal. We set goals on a daily, but do something that feels as though you know you're going to have to stretch. Yeah. And it's going to be uncomfortable, because if it's in your head that you know that you're going to have to push, then when that discomfort comes, you're a little bit more inclined to push through.
I mentioned earlier, I had this sign in my closet.
Yeah.
And the reason I put it there was, I mean, you go in your closet so many times a day. First thing you see in the morning, oh, there's that goal. It's in your head.
Yeah,
right? And at night, you get back from work. So it's a constant reminder. So
I know I do. Yeah. I always will have like a little, like my word of the year or something that I'm really focused on. Yeah. And I just write it on the mirror in my bathroom. Because same thing, because you're going to see it all the time. And I can't go to my bathroom without being like bold or whatever that, you know, I need to focus on at that point. But well, this was great. I'm so glad you guys were able to come down. This is for you. This is your Bird Talk mug.
Oh.
So now you can drink your coffee out of your Bird Talk mug.
Thank you. So, we done?
Yeah.
What happens now?
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Bird Talk, special accommodation provided by University Advancement. Thank you to Brandy Rideout, production provided by David Sharman, and I'm your host, Jamie Hurst. Keep running, roadies.